All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck, and I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable and what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic, and no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find bachelor groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com. If you hunt areas similar to ours, you probably have poor soil. You know, down here in the deep south, we are often relegated to planting our food plots on old logging decks, logging roads, power line right-of-ways, clear cuts, things of that nature. So you're often dealing with topsoil erosion and just poor quality soils. Well, there's a way you can improve those soils and get better food plots in the future, and that is Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. There's a couple different things in this blend that are going to help out your soil. First, there's brassicas. They've got deep roots that are going to break up that compacted soil. You know, a lot of times a logging deck, they've been driving equipment all over that thing, so that soil is packed in there. So that's going to help break that up. And it's also got buckwheat and sorghum, which are going to provide organic material that's going to build your topsoil, and it's going to suppress weeds. Then there's also some clovers in there, which recharge the soil with nitrogen and help loosen that soil as well. This is an excellent thing to plant in early summer because not only is it attractive and nutritious for deer, but also it's going to start prepping your soil and building your soil for this fall and even the following fall. So try out Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill, plant it for a season or two, get your soil rebuilt, and then you'll have a prime food plot for planning anything that you want. Again, that's Dirt Doctor from Whitetail Hill. Y'all go check it out at whitetailhill.com.
All right, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Southern Outdoorsman Podcast. Now, I'm sure some of y'all are wondering why this episode is called Embrace the Suck. And that is kind of a phrase that I have learned from an individual I look up to in the hunting industry, Remy Warren. And what that means, embrace the suck, is when you're hunting a very or on a very difficult and demanding hunt, you know, a lot of times it can suck. It can be miserable. And this week's episode is really going to bring that to the table with our guest, which is my buddy, Jordan Barnes from Close Proximity TV. You're going to understand how hunting can be extremely difficult, especially when you do it in certain ways and just have certain demands that you are looking for. Jordan is a pretty hardcore bow hunter when it comes to turkeys, and he does not use a blind. He hunts on the ground in a leaf suit, and you'll hear about his setup, but it's extremely difficult. He's had a very, very, very demanding last week in the turkey woods, and y'all hear about that in just a moment. But again, embrace the suck is a phrase that we use when you're having a very difficult, demanding hunt that at times can suck. It can be miserable, and you got to overcome those adversities, and you're going to hear about how he's trying to overcome these adversities of this season to, you know, end it on a right note, at least for the state of Georgia. But again, guys, we cover a lot of great topics from, you know, the difficultness of hunting, especially in the way he does it, for anyone that might be interested in, you know, chasing birds with, you know, a bow outside of a blind. But also, you know, we talk a little bit about, this filming. And I know a lot of people like myself are interested in getting to filming, not necessarily to do TV shows or anything like that, but just to really document the hunt and really enjoy it and be able to share that film and that hunt with your friends and family. And that's really the reason I want to be able to do it. And we talk a little bit about that, and we talk about some really cool setups for anyone that's really trying to get interested into or getting into filming. We can talk about that on this episode too. But again, guys, this episode really does showcase how difficult, you know, hunting can be, especially for turkeys. I mean, you could have a very, very easy, simple turkey hunt, or you could change some stuff up and, try to have to overcome some adversities throughout your season. That is definitely what Jordan's doing. He's a guy that loves a challenge, like myself. And, you know, it's one of those things that you might make the hunt more challenging for yourself, but when it all comes together and you become successful with it, it's so much more rewarding. And we really talk about that, and I'm sure some of y'all can relate. But once again, guys, let's jump right into this interview with Jordan.
Give you a recap of today?
Yeah.
Well, I'll preface it with a recap of what's been going on lately since my second tag I've killed. Ever since then, old Mr. Murphy has reared his ugly head, and that's a big part. It's somebody that you don't put in your vest, but when you take up the task and the challenge of toting a bow, camera gear, two GoPros, a main camera, and a tripod, and, you know, a decoy, because you're going to have a decoy bow hunting turkeys if you're self-filming, meaning you're operating, you know, pretty obvious for the viewers to know what self-filming means, but, you know, you're operating that camera, filming that turkey walk all the way into the decoy. It's not just cropping the camera in front of the decoy and hitting record. That would make it a lot easier for me, and, you know, I might have to do that to get it done in Georgia for the third one, but Mr. Murphy, he's in my vest. He's coming out of the vest a little bit more than I'd like. I missed a bird. I want to say that was this week, beginning of the week. I could be wrong. It might have been the end of last week. I think it was the beginning of this week. It might have been last week. I can't remember. It's I'm kind of dazed right now because of what's been going on lately, but three gobblers that I had within shotgun range probably three times already this year. I used a little bit different of an approach and was able to call in the hen with them, and they all came in, and I drew, and the first two birds I killed this year I shot high, and I thought I shot my bow and checked it, but apparently it was still high, because when I went back and shot it, it was shooting about 5 inches high. And I shot over that first nest. I shot right over him. He's right over his back. So I know I didn't aim there, but, you know, that happened. So those turkeys, I left them alone. Didn't hunt them more. Started trying to find another bird. Found one on some property I've got. Buddy let me hunt. And kind of put the brakes on public because I'm already hunting public this year in South Carolina, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming. So there's already a lot of public there that I'm going to be on. So I figured I kind of want to just go ahead. You know, if I catch up with a public land bird, great. For my third one, if not, I'm kind of bouncing back and forth in between it. But the second mix up, I got on a bird this week. I want to say it was Tuesday morning. Went around the field with a flashlight, scout, and the night before, got in there and found some gobbler tracks and everything, knew where I needed to be, made a little spot, tucked in where I wanted to set up the next morning. Slept in the truck because I was about an hour from the house. Got up that morning about 6:20. I've got like a little rubber mat, like a poncho that I keep right by my driver's side door that when I step out, you know, I put my shoes on and everything. Hit an owl hooted one time, bird gobbled like right on top of where I was going to set up. I walked down there, bird's probably 40 yards off the edge of the field. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to get the set up in time. You know, my decoy bag was caught up in my tripod on my vest. I had to take that off. Finally got it set up, snuck over there to the spot, set up. I hadn't leveled the camera in time just about, and the bird flies down.
Now, and what day was that again?
I think that was Tuesday. I want to say it was Tuesday, so I must have missed the first one last week, end of last week, I think Friday, either Thursday or Friday, something like that.
Yeah, because I remember you calling me, and you were pretty much heartbroken, and I felt bad for you, man. I mean, what'd you think? He was like around 10 yards or so?
Yeah, that was a 10-yard shot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not going to not hit a turkey at 10 yards. I mean, that was an equipment rookie mistake by not checking my equipment when I did kill two turkeys and shot high on both of them. That's all on me. That's my error. But I got finally set up. I heard the bird fly down. And next thing I know, I had just hit record because I knew he was about to step out. He steps out the field. And I had a strutter out. He came out to about 35 yards or so, gobbled his brains out, and just kind of saw what he saw and didn't want to see any more and walked off. So that was that. You know, so I was been up editing, you know, trying to get out the second kill of the year, trying to get that out this week. And I went back to that same field, the last one I thought about, the bird. I went back to that one this evening and set up on the other side of the field with a different look, with a Jake decoy. And I've been sitting there probably for about an hour and a half. It's getting about that time, you know, about 6 o'clock is when if I'm cutting in the open at 6 o'clock, bird should gobble. Or he should hear me, you know. If I'm in an area near where he roosts, then that general location. Well, I cut, yelped, did all that. Check yelped a couple times. Next time I look up, about 5 minutes later, I look out in the field and the bird's coming. He's coming right across the field, taking a rut in the field where the tractor was, taking it straight to me on a beeline. I panned the bird, found him coming all the way in. kids up there to decoy. And the one thing about a Jake decoy is, you know, if I have it lower in the ground because I figure that bird, you know, he kind of shies from the strutter, so he's probably not the dominant bird in the area. Well, when he looked over there and saw that Jake and it was lower to the ground, it's just more reassurance that I'm kind of pumping up his confidence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem with that is when he got up there on the decoy and he got behind the decoy, not much of his head's blocked by the decoy, so I could draw. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he started to get into it a little bit, and I got from the camera to the bow, and I got ready to draw, and I really should have, hindsight 2020, but I should have waited and seen if he would have turned the other direction, maybe, and maybe puffed up, strutted for me a little bit. That way I could have got drawn. But I thought that I had a pretty decent chance at getting drawn on him. So I went ahead and started. And he's facing the decoy, facing me. His head's kind of coming in and out of view. So I made a rookie mistake. Number two is there's a kind of like a, I don't know what you want to call it, like another tree growing off the tree I was on directly behind me near my draw arm. So the rookie mistake, number two, was I normally, when I set up and I get to a place, you know, that I like, and I'm going to set up there, and I get everything done, I normally try to make sure that I take a practice draw, and I make sure that my bow draw is quiet as possible. I'm not brushing against anything. And I also check that my draw cycle is full draw cycle. There's nothing obstructing my draw arm when I come back and settle the pin. Well, when I went to try to draw on this daggum turkey, still makes me so mad. I went to draw on this sucker, and when I got into the draw, he started notice me. And when he started notice me, he turned and started running. And then he stopped. And I went ahead and finished the draw cycle to settle the pin, and I could have shot him right there. He's probably about 20. That's why I like the decoy close a lot of times, is if they smell something's not quite right and they get a lead, you're still going to have them within your one pin, you know. Well, when I went to finish the draw cycle, my draw arm hit the tree, the second tree behind me. And like a dummy, I had my finger on the release.
Mm.
Near the release, and so the bow went off prematurely, probably three quarters into my draw cycle, and sent an arrow about 3 feet to the left of the turkey and probably 2 feet in front of the turkey. I never even got to aim at the bird and give him a good honest shot. And that's how it is, man. I think sometimes I take it for granted how hard it is to get it done, you know, successfully, consistently. And we're entering, this is the third week of Georgia. I mean, I've only got a handful of, I mean, I can hunt a lot. I get mornings, but that clock's ticking, you know, and every opportunity presents a new challenge. Every opportunity, I gotta take advantage of every single bird that gives me a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, you know, with that aspect of everything, you know, I don't know what we should name this episode, but, you know, definitely, you know, like I said, you know, the suck factor is real, and like, hunting can be miserable, man, just like that. I mean, scenarios like that, nothing's going your way. And especially the way you go about hunting, because, I mean, you are bow hunting outside of a blind, you know, in the elements for turkeys. I mean, it doesn't get more difficult than that. So, I mean, that just that aspect of hunting in general is going to be extremely tough. And then you have all this stuff going, you know, the wrong way for it. Doesn't make it any easier for you.
It's a trifecta of obstacles that you're trying to overcome. and probably the hardest obstacle you're trying to overcome is the self-filming aspect. Because if I'm just sitting out there with a bow, you know, without a blind, you know, I'm shooting at probably an extra 10 more turkeys this year already. You know, it's getting that bird to not be at 30 looking at you. It's getting them up there to 10, 15 and interacting with the decoy, because you've painted that picture for that turkey and he's all in. He's bought all in. He's thinking it's 100% real. So there's different hurdles. You know, just getting a bird to 30 is not as hard as getting them all the way in. You know, because these birds, they see all kind of stuff from different people hunting around there. Public land birds have heard all kind of stuff. You know, you got pressured private birds too. So there's definitely a lot of challenges, man, and it's making me, if I had any hair, I'd pull it out right now. You talk about the suck factor. I hate the suck factor.
Yep.
I don't want it to break it. I hate it. I'm telling you, but you know, I just gotta go back to the grind, man. I gotta hunt even harder. I mean, I've gotta really pull all the stops to make this third one happen. You know, and I feel like it's gonna happen. And when it does, man, it's gonna be a release of all kind of emotions that's been built up.
Yeah, well, I 100% agree with that. I mean, what you're doing and the way you're going about hunting is, you know, so stressful, you know, so tedious, that once you do have success, it's going to be worthwhile. Like you told me earlier, you know, before we actually got on the phone, you know, if you either had someone with you with a shotgun while you were hunting, or if you had a shotgun yourself, you know, you would have been tagged out, you know, extremely quickly, or, you know, you would have seen a lot more birds hit the ground. And I mean, just the aspect of how you hunt with a bow outside of a blind and self-film for your show, I mean, just makes it that much more difficult. But also, in my opinion, it's going to make it that much more rewarding when you do get this third bird.
It is, man. And, you know, I probably put a lot of unnecessary stress on myself. I have expectations. I slave drive myself, and I have to. I have to have that mentality. Like I'm telling myself right now, Jordan, you're not going to Kentucky until you finish this third bird, you know, in your home state. I mean, I almost want to tell myself you're not going out west this year unless you get it done. You know, get it done. Find a way. Dig down deep and get after it and make it happen. You know, but it's, I mean, I might have to think outside the box, man. I might have to go no decoy and just a straight up ambush. I don't know. I mean, the wheels are definitely turning right now. That's for sure.
I mean, they're definitely going to have to turn, I mean, to make this happen, because, you know, you've had so many encounters. And again, I talked to you about this before, and also talked with Andrew, that, you know, you've had so many close encounters of birds, what I'm calling now the 35 yard files, where you're having so many encounters at that range and you're not able to really get a shot off. You know, it's because it's, you know, outside your normal comfort zone. And, you know, so many times these birds are coming into these different setups and you're having to change setups just because these birds get educated every time they come in. So it makes it that much more difficult, because every time you have to do a different setup, a different look, to be able to get these birds to come into that range. And you're
got to find a different bird. And if you can't find a different bird, you got to find a different setup, a different location. He's got to be roosted in a different area. You got to use a little bit different look. You know, you might have to go one hen. You might have to go, you know, they've already seen the Jake. That one bird's already seen the Jake. Both birds have already seen the Jake. I mean, what do you do? I mean, I'm giving these birds about a week off. The three birds together, the first one I missed, they've had about a week off. Are we giving them more credit than they deserve? I mean, I've always said a turkey's got a brain the size of a peanut. Don't give them too much credit. But on the other end of the spectrum, yeah, if I said I wasn't worried about it, I'd be lying to you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, it's frustrating, man. I mean, I'm a very passionate hunter. I'm a very passionate individual. I lost my cool. I mean, this evening, I mean, it's frustrating, man. It's another level of frustration, especially when you didn't even get to aim at the turkey. You know, you didn't even get to give it an honest shot. You know, you just had a malfunction at the absolute worst time to have a malfunction. You know, I had this happen. The only other time I've had a premature bow go off was in South Dakota, 2015. Burke came in there, was on the decoy, and I was going to think about drawing, and my release came off. It fired, and I just barely pulled it back, like just maybe an inch, and my arrow went off the rest and went in the ground, and I slowly grabbed the arrow, or I think I grabbed a new arrow, and then reloaded and shot it. But this one just happened to be, it was 3/4 in the draw cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is so many times where if I had somebody with a shotgun, or if I had a shotgun, I mean, it would be, I would be done very soon, and I would be filling my wife's limit, my dad's limit, a friend's limit. I mean, so that's the nature of the beast. Like I say, I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. Sometimes I don't know why, but that why is what I'm searching for, you know?
Yeah, and I can kind of relate with you on that aspect, just a little bit. I mean, not that extreme, but I'll give you an example. So, you know, I hunt a lot of public land in central Alabama, and most of the public land, at least these management areas, you can only, during just talking deer hunting now, you can only use firearms on very limited hunts. There's only a couple weekends a year you can use them, or throughout the season, where the rest of the season you have to bow hunt. And, you know, I have access to some private land, but yeah, I just love the challenge of hunting out there on public land. You know, some years I'm not even successful, but I still enjoy it and enjoy that challenge. And, you know, like we talked about before, enjoy the suck factor where it sucks, man. I mean, there's days I will go and not see any deer, and there's some days I'll be, you know, see 2 or 3 mature bucks. And,
yeah,
you know, some days they're at 60 yards and I just can't take that shot with my bow. And, or, you know, they come by 20 yards from my stand, a mature buck, 4.5-year-old, you know, right at last light or right past last light, and he just goes past your stand. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, it's miserable, but I enjoy that. You know, I enjoy that more so than going down to our family farm where I know exactly 3 or 4 trees I can sit in and at least harvest a doe and get a chance to harvest a decent buck without, you know, too much effort. And I'd rather make it difficult and really make it a challenge, because to me it's going to be more worthwhile and more rewarding in the end. And again, I might be different. I mean, you and me are kind of same on that aspect, but compared to some of the listeners, you know, nothing against anyone that, you know, doesn't want that difficultness. But I mean, I enjoy it. I mean, I enjoy that, you know, that struggle, because once you come out of that struggle and you have success, it is so worthwhile.
Oh yeah, it is, man. It really is. I mean, and honestly, if I can get one to stay still long enough, I feel very comfortable shooting him at 30 right now. I mean, for sure. I mean, you gotta send the arrows. I mean, that's really where I'm at right now. I've got to aim at a turkey and shoot, you know. And I've done that one time that I missed this year. And this one right here is just absolute malfunction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you got a bird that's sitting there at 10 yards, I mean, that's about where that one was, 10, 12 yards. He's sitting there and he's locked in, and you're like, I'm sitting here thinking, in my mind, I'm throwing him in the back of the Toyota, you know. I'm getting ready to take some pictures, you know, and for it to happen like it did, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, man. The only thing that's going to fix this is that third bird. That's the only thing that fixes this feeling. And, you know, I'm going to go in the morning. I don't know if I'm going to get on the birds that roosted or not. I might go to public. I don't know. I'm kind of all frazzled right now. Pretty bad. but just need to find a willing participant. That's really what it boils down to.
That, and also not just having a willing participant, but more so having, you know, getting that bird to come in and getting the opportunity to be able to come back on him, draw back on him, and get that opportunity to take the shot. Because it's one thing to get him within range. It's another thing to go from your camera to your bow, draw back, and get the shot off without him taking off running. I mean, we can talk a little bit. Actually, let's talk a little bit about your setup and everything you do. So, again, guys, you know, Jordan, you know, he hunts out of a blind. I mean, he hunts without a blind, on the ground with his bow. But Jordan, talk a little bit about how you go about using your camouflage to your advantage and how you camouflage your bow and your camera equipment.
Okay, so what I do is I go to Hobby Lobby. I just get some ivy, plastic ivy that they have there. It's only 50% off around the springtime, so it works out pretty good. And I take black zip ties, and I have a way that I do it to my bow. I'll do both sides of the bow, and you're basically breaking up your outline. It's just a form of camouflage. I mean, I'll put some on my hat. I'll also, my tripod, I'll spray with an olive dab spray paint, and I'll put some ice on the first two legs that face out. But the real, I'll tell you, one of the biggest tricks that I do, is I have a green leafy suit. So I found this thing at a yard sale. It's a green, all green leafy suit. You might be able to buy it somewhere, but it's all green. So it's showing the exact colors of spring. So you need a leafy suit. That's your biggest help. A leafy suit that's as green as you can find one. I am a lefty. So I set up on the left side of the tree, obviously. I'll go ahead and level my tripod and all that stuff. I'll even put some ivy on my camera arm, like on the top of my handle for my audio on my camera. I'll put it on my camera. And I will set up on the left side of the tree, level the camera. I'll have my bow off to the left of it, and I'll try to set up. I don't really tuck back in the woods. I mean, if it's a really windy day, I'll put the decoy right out there at like 5 to 7 yards. It just depends if it's really windy. And sometimes you don't need all that ivy and stuff if it's windy and stuff like that, if you've got a good backdrop. But a good backdrop is another thing. You got to, like, have a lot of green behind you. You know, now you can sit out there in, like, the wide open, and you might get away with it, you know, 1 or 2 out of 10 times. But if you want to be consistent, you need to be having a good green backdrop behind you. That's the next thing. So, apart from that, that's pretty much the setup. And, you know, I'll put the decoy off to my left, because obviously that's going to give me a better window to clear the camera in the frame of what the camera's filming, where I can get off the shot and not have junked up video. But that's pretty much my setup.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk about, so we kind of went over the actual camouflage, how you do that. And I will say, guys, we'll have a picture of Jordan and his setup, and, you know, kind of so you can visualize what he's talking about. He does use a pretty green, light green leaf suit, which, like he says, does you know, really show off those spring colors really well. Especially, I'm guessing, if you're hunting around a lot of privet hedge or something like that, it would blend in really well. But also, talk a little bit, again, for anyone that's possibly interested in starting to hunt turkeys with a bow, your actual bow setup from, you know, what bow you're using, your sight, and then also talk about, you know, how you have your bow stationed for when you're ready to shoot and how it's always sitting upright.
Yeah, okay, so the sitting upright, Matt Adcock, a guy that used to build these things, it's a bow bipod, kind of like it goes into where your stabilizer goes. I bought it from him. Not sure if he's still producing those. I don't think he is. But I was able to talk him out of one, and I bought it from him. That's a big help. There's some other companies that make a bow pod. I think Axion Archery has one. That one, you know, the only thing I don't like about that one is when you fold out the legs on it, it doesn't hold your bow at level. And my bow, I want my bow level, totally level, upright. I don't want it, like, cocked down. I want it level. And then there's, I think, Bow Sticks makes one. I think it's just a little bit difficult to pack and stuff. Mine's pretty stationary, so that's the one I use. I like it. The bow, I use an Obsession bow. I'm shooting a hemorrhage this year for turkeys. Last year I shot a DEFCON M7, and I liked it too. But the hemorrhage is a little bit shorter axle-to-axle, so it's a lot lighter, and it's just easier for me to pack it. Maneuverability is there. I'm shooting probably 60 pounds at a 29-inch draw. I'm shooting a heavy air. I'm just shooting my deer hunting air, really. I'm shooting the same thing I shoot at deer, which is 125-grain ram cap, original. I like it. It's just got a big cutting diameter. Turkeys, when I say when I shoot, when I hit them, they don't seem to go that far. They expire pretty quickly, good humane kill. And that's pretty much the bow setup. I shoot a sword sight, Judge Pro, and it's basically, there's all kind of sights you can use at work. I mean, it's not just the sword, but I like the sword because it's a one-pin sight, and it's built really rugged. It can withstand me throwing it around the woods, dragging it through creeks, stuff like that. And it, got a good bright pin, and one thing I'll touch on is, like, when you're bow hunting turkeys, I don't want to have to think in the heat of the moment. I want to put one pin on the turkey where it should be. You know, I don't want to have to think, oh, is it second or the third? You know, you got to simplify, or at least I do need to simplify my setup as much as I can, so I don't want to have to be thinking all kind of other things when I'm about to aim at a turkey. And that's really what my setup is.
Well, I have another question, actually, about your sight setup. I mean, one-pin sight, I can see that being very effective for turkeys. But when you're hunting in a hunting scenario with your decoy spread, whatever, you know, whatever distance you want to keep them at, what do you normally dial your sight down to? I mean, are you holding it at a clean 20? Or are you dialing it down lower than that? Or what's your setup for that?
It's basically dead on at 10, which is going to be dead on at 20, and then out of 30, it's going to start dropping a good bit, maybe 4 inches. So what I'll do is I'll just judge it by yardage. I mean, the turkey that I shot, it was actually, I stepped it off, it was 38 yards, I want to say. So I aimed over the top of the turkey's head, a little hair, and I should have hit the turkey. My bow was on, I would have actually hit him in the high back area, but instead my bow was shooting high, and I hit him in the head, which, you know, that worked out. But normally I'm just kind of judging distance on the whim, and I'm pretty decent at it. I feel confident doing it, but anything, I mean, I'm not going to shoot at one normally that far at 40. I just felt like it that day. I mean, tomorrow, if one steps out there still at 40, you know, I might hold it high and send it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of at that stage.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's another aspect about, you know, just hunting with a bow like that in that scenario. I mean, kind of being prepared for all situations and hoping you're prepared for all situations. I mean, I think that's the biggest key. Because, I mean, there's so many things that could, you know, play a factor that could really mess up a hunt really quickly. Hunting with a bow in that scenario, you know, out of the, you know, the safety of a blind. I mean, there's just so many factors going against you. So, I mean, pretty much the odds really aren't in your favor when you're hunting in that scenario. So, I mean, you really have to have your cards aligned and everything set up to really be able to be productive doing that.
Yeah, there isn't. I mean, a lot of times, you know, decoys hurt you a lot of times. I mean, like I say, there's only so many setups you can have. And, you know, it's just one of the things, when you have that camera, it's a must. So, You know, if I was hunting with a shotgun, I would not even carry a decoy, just because I think calling that turkey, I'm a lot better off doing that and get him to come find me. If it's on the edge of a field inside the woods or in the woods, or, you know, get him to pop over that hill or get him to come find me. When he shows his face in the woods, he's in range. When I'm hunting with a bow and he shows his face, the hunt just got started. You know, what is he going to do now? Is he going to come in? Am I going to have to work him a little bit more? Is he going to get up there at about 20 and see something he doesn't quite like? Is he going to see a little bit of a glare? That's another thing. You want to really set up in the shadows. This evening I was in, had some sun on me, and it worked out. And that's probably what he might have seen, was some of that sunlight off the boat. But there's so many little factors that you really got to think about doing it. And, you know, if you decide you want to take up the challenge, I will pray for you.
Well,
you're going to need it.
Well, yeah, now let's kind of do a little bit more of a season recap up to this point, as in kind of what you've been up to again, and then also, you know, how your first two harvests this year in Georgia went.
All right, so the first bird I got on opening day, caught him up to about, I don't know, 15 yards or so. He hung around for about 10 seconds, long enough for me to get to the bow. But then he walked out of the camera frame. So I could have tried to probably draw on him, but I didn't, and he just went off. Ended up coming back in the field with some hens and couldn't do anything with them. So that happened. I want to say I worked several of the turkeys that came up to about 40 yards and just didn't want any part of it. And then I went back that Monday morning to the same field and showed a little bit different look, and he came in again and hung around for a little while, did the same type thing, stayed there for about long enough for me to get to the bow, and then he started leaving, so I drew on him. That's the one that I shot high and hit him in the head. And then since then I got on probably three or four more birds that came within, you know, 4 yards, didn't want any part of it, and got on one on public, a couple on public. One, I conceded to somebody that was there before me. I had the bird roosted, and I felt like I would have had a really good shot at him that morning, but somebody got there just a little bit before me, so I couldn't get where I wanted to get. The bird flew down right where I needed to be. That happened, and then another time I got on a bird on public, about, 7:30, 8 o'clock that morning. I was walking down a long pine road, cutting about a mile and a half from the truck, struck the bird, played the waiting game on him. You know, it's that time when you got to shut up on him, and you're just waiting, whoever talks first loses, you know. And I had been sitting there probably 20 minutes of silence, and he gobbled. And then I started to have the conversation again. Instead of hitting the pine road, he decided to swing all the way around behind me. So I had hardly any cover. Granted, it was planted pine. And he ended up coming in, called him in behind me about 30 yards with about 6 jakes. I want to say it was about 6 jakes. And he didn't want to commit. I mean, I could have swung on the tree with a shotgun and probably blasted him. Could have missed him. Who knows? But would have had a chance. So that happened, didn't have a chance there. And then I want to say I got on 3 gobblers, called them up to about 35 yards, and they didn't want to commit. So then I decided to go back, hunt the same turkeys in the pouring down rain without a decoy. And they came, I called them close, but they swung in behind me. And ended up coming out 3 different times after that. I quit calling after I called them up once. And I came close, but it just didn't work out. And then the next morning, I went back and showed a little bit different look with a Jake. And they had a hen with them. and I heard them gobbling behind me in a field. So I called to him some, the hen took them off, and I said to myself, you know, they're going to come back. So about an hour later, they gobbled in another field real close. And so I pretty much gobbled at them one time and shut up, and here they come. Here comes the hen and three gobblers, and they, you know, came up there to 10 yards, and, you know, my bow was shooting high. I think I skipped one bird. The second bird is the one I skipped. Before that, me and a guy, a buddy of mine, Mr. Warren, we went out to a place he has, and I called up two gobblers, came all the way up there. I shot one. He shot the other one. And then I, you know, the next day I got on those three that I called up. Then I ended up, you know, subsequent days I ended up getting them in there to 10 yards, then missed. And that miss is really what started the old Mr. Murphy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I shot high over that turkey's back. And, you know, I re-sighted in, feeling confident about my setup, went to another place the next day. Got on a bird off the roost. That was the one I was telling you that came out in the field. Barely got set up in time. He gobbled and strutted, you know, out there about 35 and didn't want any part of it and left. And I waited a day or two to give him some time and showed a different look this evening, and that's when I had the malfunction. So that's pretty much my season so far. I called one in for my dad. It was two birds came in. I was just filming him and actually had a camera malfunction. I just quit recording and just enjoyed the moment with my dad. But I called two all the way across the field without a decoy. Like I was telling you before, if I'm got a shooter that has a shotgun, I really don't want to carry one just because it's I feel like I have the advantage without it more so than I do with it. And plus, my birds, if I'm hunting them already with a bow and I'm going to take somebody with a shotgun, I don't want them to see a decoy, because that's just ruining more opportunity for me when I have to take a bow. You know what I mean? So that was that. And then I also, I mean, the beginning of the season, I guess I skipped the beginning. Youth season, I called in a bird. Bunch of gobblers that had a bunch of hens with them. I did a fight bird, is what pulled all of them in. But that's pretty much the recap so far. Six birds. You know, should have been a lot more. But that's about what it is.
Yeah, and actually something you said that I kind of want to touch on a little bit about, and actually it's really a two-part question. The first part is, would you kind of break down what some of these looks that you're doing, or what you call looks, on some of your properties to change it up to give these birds a different idea of a different set that you're putting out for them to make it a little more realistic? So would you touch on that first, and then I'll hit you with the second question after that.
Okay, so basically if I work a bird and he comes up there and he doesn't like something, it could be a lot of things. So I'm trying to, like, process of elimination. What is it he didn't like? Was it I had too much sun on me? Was it he saw a glare on the camera? Was it he's already got his butt kicked and he's really subdominant? So even if you have a red head color scheme with saying that you're a subdominant bird, even if you have the right color scheme on the head and all that, and he still shies away from strutter, well, then I'm going to need to throw the strutter in the trash can on that bird, and I'm going to need to try to use a jake maybe. Or, you know, the later in the season it gets, I like it because I'm going to use just a hen. You know, that's going to give me a lot better odd if he's seeing just a hen and he's hot, because he's going to strut around that hen. He's going to interact with that hen. It's going to be a lot better chances probably for me to draw. But if something doesn't work on a bird, I'm going to change it up some. You know, I'm going to try to change the area in which I work that bird. I'll try to get on him in a different look. I'll try to use a different decoy look. There's all kind of things I try to change, but I definitely want it to be different. if I have a close call with a bird, I definitely want it to be a totally different look. And I really want to give them a little bit of time to kind of forget about, you know, what happened 2-3 days before. I might want to give them a week, you know.
Yeah, now, okay, and kind of going towards my second question, which still has about the topic of decoys. When you're hunting public land, what decoy setup are you using for that, and what look are you using in public land?
Man, you know, I was in Carolina, and I forgot to mention this about the season recap. It was really 3 or 4 long beards, probably 4 jakes that I had come in to about, 40. They swung in behind me to about 30 maybe. And I had a Jake out there with a laydown hen, and I don't think they could see it. Maybe if they'd have seen a hen upright, they would have came. But they kind of skirted me, so I was kind of scratching my head there. But, you know, it's either a strutter or a Jake. What was your question again? I was a little bit sidetracked there.
Yeah, no problem. Just what's your decoy and look setup on public land when you're hunting public land?
Oh, yeah, okay, public land. So I had a Jake on public land there. If I would have had a strutter there, I feel like my chances may have been better. Those particular turkeys, you know, for whatever reason, I felt like they would have strutted. Strutter's a lot to tote, man. It's heavy. You got to carry a fan with it. It's somewhat dangerous. I try to go in the dark and get away from people. I want to go as far as I can if I'm going to use a strutter. It's dangerous. I mean, it just is. So that's kind of what I want to do now. Kayak hunting, a lot of that, it's going to be easier to pack a hen and a Jake, put on the back of the kayak, and that's really what I'm going to use on public more so than anything is just a Jake and an upright hen. That's probably my go-to.
Okay, well, on another aspect of something you just touched on, which I wanted to get to, was, you know, you're using access with a kayak on some public land. You know, what kind of got you turned onto that? And also, you know, do you have any special setup with your kayak, or are you just using a pretty basic sit-on-top?
Yeah, I'm using a basic kayak. I mean, nothing extravagant. Got a spot in the back where you can strap down your decoys. Got a spot in the front where you can strap down your bow. My camera stays with me, packed in my vest. I wear my vest as I'm in the kayak. That keeps it, you know, water from getting in it. Now, if I flip that thing, I'm up the creek. You know, not going to be a good scenario there. But I try to be really careful with that. I've also got 2 GoPros. So, but yeah, that's kind of the setup with the kayak. And I like the Jake and the Hen because it's a lot easier to transport it.
Okay. Now, another thing, this is kind of me just thinking off the top of my head. Have you ever thought about putting your camera in a big dry bag and just like wrap it up in there?
Yeah, I have. I don't really, in this kayak, I don't have that much room for that. And it takes me a solid, probably, when I first started, it might have taken me 15 minutes to get set up. To where I've set up there before, it might take me 5 minutes. So I try to expedite that process, especially when you're trying to run and gun, trying to strike a bird. Another thing I do is, let's say I had a certain amount of properties to hunt, where there's a certain amount of public land spots that I like that are off the beaten path, a long way away. I try to envision, okay, that bird's going to roost based on my scouting. I'm thinking, he's roosting here. If he roosts here, I'm going here. And this is where I need to set up. This is the best setup for that position, getting on that bird. And I'll do that to every single spot. It might be 30, 40 setups, 50 setups that I pre-fix up before the season even starts. You know, now I'm going to have new setups throughout the season, and those take longer. You know, because I want my film to be good. You know, I want to try to produce the best product I can, the best memory I can to relive it. So that takes a lot of time. But, you know, if I'm on a bird and he's coming, I got to be quick with it, you know. And I've had plenty of birds catch me with my pants down. You know, they caught caught me with my hand in the cookie jar, and I'm over there looking at them, and that's a done deal. You know, they're putting and gone the way.
Yeah, and, you know, just another thing is, you know, you do, you know, film for your show and everything. You know, how long have you actually been self-filming?
I've been filming probably, I was filming with a shotgun turkeys for a long time, probably, and I've got some old, the footage isn't that good. I don't feel like it's, I mean, it's good footage, but it's not, you know, the quality I want. You know, like shotgun blast, shaking the camera and stuff like that. I just never decided to show that type of stuff just because the quality that I go for is kind of what I've, you know, been fortunate enough to produce lately. But, yeah, it's your question was basically, what was it again? It was about, I'm hardly any sleep, I guess.
I can say chasing birds as often as you have been and getting whooped up on right now has probably worn you out. But, you know, just how long you've been filming for, but also, you know, to kind of touch on another topic, you know, for someone like myself, because I'm looking to get into filming, I know we've talked about cameras, you and myself have talked about different camera options for me, and I've talked to a couple other individuals about doing the same. And, you know, there's a lot of guys right now, you know, filming is getting really, really popular, not necessarily for, like, doing your own show, but really just to document your hunts and really just have something fun and cool that you can show your buddies. And, you know, just to get into filming, is there any actual camera or any setup that you would recommend for someone just wanting to start off, you know, maybe have just, like, decent quality, you know, good enough quality that, you know, they don't mind showing people of it and they're proud of it. But, you know, what's a decent camera, a decent setup for someone to get started to really get, you know, started filming?
I'd say get you one good secondary angle camera. Get you a GoPro Hero 6 Black. You know, get that. Get you a clamp on for it where you can kind of tell a story, film yourself, tell people things. But as far as the main camera, there's some 4K cameras out there that are good and all. I like a Canon XA30 just because it's got XLR input, which gives you professional audio. So the audio that you can capture with that, with an external mic, I run a Sennheiser MKE600. It's a $400 price point shotgun mic, but it's gonna pick up all that wing dragging, spitting and drumming, gobble in your face, that type audio. It's going to do a really good job there. And that's a 1080p, 60 frames per second camera. So that's a pretty good little setup. It's small enough to pack it. You're going to want something that you can pack, you know. Now, deer hunting, I don't run an external mic. As far as weight-wise, I just kind of strip my camera down and take it. I use a fourth-era camera arm. It's pretty packable. It's a pretty good little system. And, you know, that's what I would recommend to people. You know, if you can't afford a Canon XA30, I go with like a G40, something like that is a good camera by Canon. And like I say, there's some others out there that are good too, that are like 4K.
Yeah, and see, I've been told by a buddy of mine that he just got the Canon 40, and he absolutely loves it. And then I know you told me about your camera and everything, and so I'm kind of torn in between of, you know, what I kind of want to get started with, because I, you know, I'd love to start filming, you know, for the podcast and also for my other page, the Running Gun Whitetail Hunters, but also just for, you know, having, you know, documentation of these hunts. I mean, you know, something definitely versatile enough that I could, you know, go on a, you know, deer hunt, turkey hunt, or maybe on a waterfowl hunt and, you know, document it, but also on our next Western hunt going out west, whether we're going to do elk or mule deer, and be able to document that hunt as well and have, you know, high quality photo or high quality images and film for that, and to really bring back to all the listeners, but also to all my friends and family. Because, I mean, you know, films is something that, you know, I remember growing up, you know, that was something we always would do with a little handy cam, a little camcorder. And then, you know, that's what my uncles got us doing too while we were young. I mean, I remember my very first deer kill was filmed on an old handy cam and made for a great time because, you know, we'd get together for Christmas or something. My uncle or someone would play that video and, you know, see me be able to get the opportunity when I was like 11 years old. So, you know, I think filming is a great opportunity for anybody that really wants to, you know, have, you know, that documentation of those hunts and really be able to remember it But on another note, Jordan, how about you tell us the negative side of self-filming?
Man, it's more stuff to kick me. Sometimes I wish I'd never done it. I mean, I'm hooked now, so I'm addicted to it. But it's a lot of variables. I mean, I'm committed to it, though. I mean, if I can't get it on camera, I don't even want to mess with it. And that cost me animals. I mean, a lot of times that cost me a tag. But it's perfecting it, trying to. Like I say, I have a lot to learn, and I've been doing this, you know, self-filming probably since 2009, probably with old camcorder stuff. But it's just trying to make it easier on yourself, trying to find little ways to make it easier, you know.
Now, is there any advice you'd give to a new individual to maybe that's, you know, starting to film their hunts? Is there any, you know, anything you would recommend for them to do or to, you know, get started when it comes to just, you know, trying to have as much success while hunting and filming and, you know, trying to get it all on camera?
Try to focus on being a cameraman first and a hunter second. That's basically what I'm doing. Cameraman first, hunter second. Some people don't really want to do that, and that's fine. You know, everybody's got to have their own style. They got to mold to their own style. I've kind of molded myself. I've got my own unique style that I adopt, and that's kind of what I do. But definitely a fluid head tripod. That's a must. Got to have a fluid head. That's going to take out a lot of the creaking and cracking and all that stuff. Got to have a good fluid motion. That's going to help out a lot. And practice. Get out in the yard. Practice filming birds. Practice filming squirrels and stuff like that. And then go back and watch your footage and say, man, is that something I would, you know, is that shaking me to death when I'm watching it? Or is that center frame? Is that pretty decent little shots, you know? Just practice at it, really.
No, perfect. Now, before we let you go and turn this episode over, now, give us a little recap or a little, I guess, a view of what the rest of your season is looking like and what you have planned for the rest of this season.
Well, my plan is, Lord willing, I'm going to punch that third tag very soon. I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself, but I gotta be, because I'm gonna have to dig down deep to get it done. But that really is this quest to finish out in Georgia. And then I'm still hunting some Carolina here and there sporadically. I've got three tags for Carolina public land. That's what I'm hunting, Carolina. And then I'm planning on taking a trip to Kentucky at some point. I've got a trip there. I've got birds on public that I know where they're at. I'm going to try to make that happen, make a run up there. And then I'm taking a big trip out west. I'm doing, I'll be doing Washington, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Nebraska, and possibly either adding Oregon to that or North Dakota to that. Not sure yet. Still kind of working out the logistics. And really what I just enjoy traveling, you know. I enjoy traveling. I enjoy hunting turkeys in different states. And, you know, I'm chasing 49. I'm trying to see the whole United States, through the lens of a camera. And I'm trying to do it with a bow the way that I enjoy to do it. So trying to knock out some states and still enjoy it. We'll see, you know, how many I can finish out this year, and I'll just try to take, you know, four or five states a year, and eventually, hopefully by the time I retire, I'll finish the whole thing. But
no, I mean, that's awesome, man. I'm really jealous of you. I know me and Andrew are talking about going out west again next year. We're going to do our own little turkey tour, where we're going to start out hopefully in South Florida and then come back to Alabama or Tennessee area and try to get it eastern, and then we're going to try to go up and hit Nebraska and Kansas and try to get a Miriam and a Rio while we're up there. But, man, that's awesome. That's a great setup that y'all have going on for that, man. But once again, Jordan, man, I really do appreciate you coming on this evening and kind of, you know, opening our eyes to, you know, the suck factor, man, how difficult that hunting can truly be, especially when you want to do something different and really want to make it rewarding, but, you know, go through a lot of obstacles and adversities to try to make it happen, man. So I'm glad you really brought that to the table today. I think a lot of our listeners really got out of, you know, turkey hunting can be easy or, man, it can be difficult. It just all depends on how you want to go about doing it and how you want to hunt, man. And
that's the truth, man. And I'll tell you another thing. Be looking for the second bird. I'm going to post that probably tonight or tomorrow. And then probably going to see, I'm hoping that I can finish this third bird this week or definitely next week. But I'll have some suck factor for people to watch to make fun of me, how hard it is. But I'll be showing that because that's real, you know. I don't want to just show when everything works out great. I want to show when it doesn't. You know, and that's something I haven't done before, but I'm gonna do because that's just it's real, you know. And that's what I think a lot of times, you know. I've been guilty of skipping out on that, not showing that type of stuff. But I think it just shows, you know, more of the value of how hard it is, you know.
Well, that too, and also, you know, really shows how truly human you are, because I think a lot of people in the hunting industry, especially, this one reason I kind of have turned away from some outdoor television shows is because it's 22 minutes of just kills. And I mean, if that's your thing, that's fine. But, you know, no one bats, you know, 1,000, you know, there's no batter that's ever had that. So, I mean, you're going to have some losses. You're going to have some mistakes. You're going to have some wounded animals. You're going to have all kinds of things that are going to happen that some people will leave out of their documents and their filming and everything. And I'm glad that you're putting that in to really relate with your listeners and your viewers of, you know, it's real. I mean, misses happen. I mean, stuff happens. And I mean, it makes you seem more average, which you are, but, you know, allows guys like myself to be able to look at that and be like, yeah, this dude's true. I mean, you know, he's genuine and, you know, he's going to show, you know, both sides of the story. You know, it's not all pretty and it's not all great. I mean, that's, again, the reason why this episode is going to be called The Suck Factor. I mean, there are times when hunting can be miserable, hunting can suck, but then again, it can make it all worthwhile in the end. And I mean, that's what you're going for right now.
Yeah, I wish it was always sunshine and rainbows. I really wish it was, but it sure isn't.
Yeah, I wish we could all...
I wish I didn't have any like terrible hardships to show and struggles to show, but you know, part of it.
And that's what makes you grow as a hunter and what makes you grow as a human. I mean, I wish we could all kill, you know, 200-inch whitetail and, you know, always kill, you know, some giant, you know, 2-inch spurred turkeys, man. But, you know, that's not reality.
No, it's not.
So, but once again, Jordan, man, I do appreciate you coming on, man, and, you know, showing us the true light of how hunting can truly be, especially when you do something as difficult as you do, as, you know, chasing turkeys with a bow outside of a blind, man. But I wish you have an awesome rest of your season. We'll stay in touch, brother, and I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, man, y'all have a good one, and I'll keep y'all today. Y'all do the same.
All right, I'm going to tell y'all how I like to use one of my favorite tools out in the woods, and that is the tracker from Onyx Hunt. So here's how I've been using it lately. I got this new property I'm going to be hunting this year, and the very first thing I did on the property was I went out and I drove all of the roads that are drivable in my truck. And I had the tracker on as I was driving around. So after I got done driving around, I selected the track on my app and changed it to where it's just a solid black line. So now I've got a really nice, easy to see roadmap of everywhere that's drivable in a truck on the property. So here's what that does for me so far. Now I've got an easy to read map of everywhere that you can drive in a truck on the property. But also that roadmap is actually very useful because it makes it very easy for me to see what roads are drivable And what parts of the property are most accessible and what parts of the property are least accessible. Like I said, one of my favorite tools. If you're not using it already, you should be. And if you want to give Onyx a try, go get an Elite membership and use the promo code Southern at checkout. That's going to save you 20% and it's going to help the show out. Know where you stand with Onyx Hunt. If you hunt deer out of trees, you need to go check out latitudeoutdoors.com. They got a little something for everybody, whether you're a saddle guy or if you hunt out of a climber. Of course, Latitude makes some of our favorite saddles and climbing sticks, but they also make some great packs and backpack straps that you can attach to the bottom of a climbing tree stand to make it more comfortable to carry in the woods. Probably my favorite piece of gear I've gotten in the last several years is the Ranger 22 from Latitude. It's like a do-it-all backpack for me. It's compact, which I like, but it's adjustable enough that it gets me through the whole season. It's the only pack I use. I use it in early bow season, when I'm not carrying much in the woods, all the way to late January rut hunts in the deep south when it's cold and I'm carrying all kinds of clothes and all kinds of stuff on my back. The Ranger 22 is adjustable enough that I can just use that one backpack all season. And hey, all you Mossy Oak Bottomland fans, they just released the Ranger 22 in Mossy Oak Bottomland. So like I said, no matter how you like to hunt, Latitude's got something for you. Go check them out at latitudeoutdoors.com.
Well, guys, meet your new favorite summer scouting optic. And no, it's never too early to start scouting for the fall. Introducing the Vortex Crossfire Spotting Scopes with three different models of how you glass. Me and Andrew have both used spotting scopes in the summer to go out and glass fresh, clear cuts that's got a little bit of growth on them to find basher groups actually feeding in the summer. It's a pretty fun time, and also it's a great opportunity to take your kids out, especially if you can sit in the truck while you're glassing. It's always one of those pieces of optics like to keep in the truck at all times because you never know when you might need it. Be sure to stop by your local Vortex dealer to get out the all-new Crossfire Spotting Scopes or to get 10% off your favorite spotter, head over to eurooptic.com and enter code Southern10 at checkout to save 10% on your order.
You know, one reason that we named our company the Southern Outdoorsman is because we're not just Southern deer hunters or Southern turkey hunters. We kind of hunt everything: quail, doves, waterfowl, rabbits, squirrels, you name it. I know a lot of you guys are the same way, and our friends at Whitetail Hill are like that as well. Whether you've got a hunting club, a lease, or your own property, they've got a blend for pretty much every situation on a piece of ground. I mean, they've got a seed blend for everything. If you want warm season deer forage, check out Summer Bulk. If you need to screen off a plot or cover an access route, Hideaway grows up to 12 feet tall and is built for that exact purpose. You got a duck hole or a pond edge? Check out the waterfowl blend. You want to plant for doves or quail? Check out their dove and quail plot. If you need soil that needs a little bit of work before fall, check out Dirt Doctor. And of course, they got a full cool season lineup ready to go when fall planting time gets here. And if you're unsure about what to plant, go to whitetailhill.com. They've got a seed selection guide on there that'll help you pinpoint exactly what you need on your property. So y'all check them out today. That's Whitetail Hill. Go to whitetailhill.com.